Accession number 9535, reel 12.
Mr. George Cole, reel 12. I wonder if you could continue the story of what happened after you told the officer to go to hell at Harbinier's.
Well, after we pulled out and we're on the retreat back and forth, different positions for a while, and then I says, the major pulled me up one day, and there was only him and me together, and I says, Cole, I want to worry you. I said, yes, sir. He says, you were on duty at Harbinier's the morning we played out. I said, yes, sir. He says, you'll be the man, he says, told Mr. Sergeant to go to hell. Yeah, he says, I never saw Mr. Sergeant, sir. He says, that's right, he says, you wouldn't see him in the dark. He says, but he says, I understand you told Mr. Sergeant to go to hell. I says, I can't remember that, sir. I says, maybe I might have done, but I says, must have been me. Because I says, he was kept interrupting. I says, I was trying to get you on at headquarters. The line was down. I says, I was keeping in touch with Mr. Richardson at the forward going. I says, we were keeping in touch, I says, with the captain sort of the long lines. And I says, I must have said it in me temper, see. He says, who sent for the teams? Well, I says, I took it on myself, sir. I says, I thought myself that something was astir, because I says, the machine gun fire was that close. And I says, well, he says, what about if there weren't any? Well, I said, a good hour to go back, sir. But I said, well, he says, I'll tell you now. He says, I was pleased, he says, when they were there to get out. He says, you know, he says, you're liable to a court martial call, he says, for swearing the officer. Well, I says, oh, well, I says, I do have a court-martial, sir. I'm not worried about a court-martial, sir. And he gave me such a look, and he says, no. He says, I don't think you'll take any harm. And he says, live near. He says, forget it. And I remember him, he says, forget all about it. He says, that never happened, see. And I never heard no more about it, see. And
how close did the Germans get to you at Harbinier's?
They're gone. Well, they must have been within hundreds and hundreds of yards, close to, see, because you could see that, you could tell by the fire, the rifle fire, machine gun, it was fairly close, see. And I remember we retired back, and then we'd got across the bridge of the Somme, and they were pulled in the open position, and we'd lost contact with our forward observing officer. And I remember we stand, the guns lined up there, and we lost contact, couldn't say that. We knew there was fighting again across the river, see, and because the Royal Engineers, they were busy preparing to blow the bridge up as we came back. We saw them, and everyone streaming across the bridge. So I remember the major says, this fellow was on the crest, and he had a flag, waving the flag, and we couldn't make nothing out on him, see. He says, see how that is, Cole, see. So I started giving the usual things. He used to say, are you? That means, who are you, see. And anyway, we couldn't get nothing back what we could read, see. So he says, get away, he says, see how it is, he says. So I put two flags, blue and a white flag, and away I went, and I come across barbed wire entanglements, but it had been made like for defense. And anyway, I worked my way through, and I was carrying the flag to show him where I was going. I tell him it was on the flag, there was wire, see. Anyway, I got the top, this fellow had vanished. And I looked over the crest, and you could see all action. It's generally trying to get across the river, see. So I flagged back to the major, and he came up, and I was there with him, and he was directing our guns down onto them, see. And on the finish, we had to pack up and retire again. And that was went on for there might have been 10 days or a fortnight, say, back and forward, back. Why, no, not much forward. I was retiring. See, you couldn't keep really keep a check on the positions you were in. You know, see.
Were you in action much? Were you in action much?
Yes, firing and different. And the last time that stood in my mind about retiring was we got to retire. And the major had gone back to like a reconnoitre another position, say, and Mr. Granger was left in charge. And our guns were still firing, and the team come up, and he stood there, first team, and get a horn. It's just like a place, and directing each team to get out and clear out.
See? And is that group came up with Mr. Granger's horse and my horse, eh? And he stood in.
Got every team out, off they went. And then him and me went together back. And he was as cold as a cucumber as Mr. Greens, I see. But that went on, we got pulled up.
When you were retiring, did you have any problems with the roads being blocked by the refugees or other units?
There were, there's times the roads. In fact, I remember one time we had to pull up the road and drive through fields. The civilians was going back.
Oh, it was pretty good to see them on one day. Women with kiddies and little bits of grubbers and that.
Oh, there's masses of people there on the retreat, see. And anyway, eventually they got them pulled up at the finish, and it was well past Arbonnais where it was halted in front of Armeans, you know, see. He never got to Armeans, Jerry didn't, see. And
did you get your supplies all right during the retreat?
Oh, yes, because the advantage was we were dropping back onto our ammunition, see. The ammunition ended to come up, we were dropping back, and the ammunition was dumped. And I remember one time we were coming back, there was a petrol dump. Yeah, there were stacks and stacks of, they still got petrol tins, I see. And we couldn't take it back. So somebody had a brainwave, right, and got him telling me all okay, clear. And when they got away, they fired into them and said, fire them, and where they went up. If we left them, that would have been a present to Jerry, say. And there's a lot of confusion. You couldn't really keep tally of what was going on in that, such as I'd say.
Was your food dumped with the ammunition at the same time? Would you get your food in dumps like as you got your ammunition?
Well, sometimes we didn't get the food. That one time we come back, Peter and me, we left. And there'd been a canteen, they'd evacuated this canteen, and Peter and me went in and looked around, scrounging around. The others had gone, I see. And anyway, we filled over two sandbags. Full of hate was this stuff of the bread with 5 or 6 loaves of bread, and we were making a joke of it. But anyway, when I got back, eventually found the we come across the infantry first, and we're going to drink a tea off them. And we come across the battery, and they were sitting down having a meal, so-called meal. They were all having a drink of tea, they had no sugar, just a drink of tea. And we had bread and tins of butter. We were in clover. So I remember I got old Dixie laid, and I cut this bread and saw this in the slices for the man to see with us. And we opened this tin of stuff, and Peter says, "What are you doing?" I says, and the major officer only had biscuits. So I put this tin, I put this sandwich, made these sandwiches up, see, and I goes over, I says, "Excuse me, Major," I says, "what do you like a sandwich?" And he made such a look. He says, "Where are you getting this call?" I said, "Oh, won it, sir." As I was crying out, I mean, "You won it, see." And anyway, I put on the lid, and these sandwiches, and he says, "You book a call," he says, "that saved my life," he says. Because they were not used to eating biscuits, you know, see.
How would you got separated from the battery? You say you were...
We used to be forward, And then you'll get the order retiring. Why the bunny where you're not going to be.
Yeah. You were in the observation post.
You're in the observation, see? And there was the officer of the way away, so you get what lining. Were real wires out and laid them in. On the finish, they got short of wire. You know, you're leaving the, getting the wire lying there in the old. And then retiring when you couldn't rail it in, see? So it come with the finish come with like more or less visual signal, maybe flags and that, say.
But I've managed to. Were you as accomplished with the flags as you were? I mean, were you practiced enough to cope with the flags? Because it wasn't what you'd usually do, was it?
Oh, what do you mean?
Were you good enough with the flags?
Oh, yes, yeah, I could rail it later. I rail with the flags as close as I die, I see. And, we did a regular flag. In fact, I was using flags on the Somme in the 1916 when the tanks was going over. There's one time the lines were down, lost, couldn't keep them up, so one time I was back to the OP with a flag. I did the flag, a visual signal. It always coming on, you see. I always carried the flag. Didn't matter what was the matter, you still carry the flags as emergency, see.
How many would you carry in? What?
Well, you only wanted one flag for signalling, you know, see? Well, you just carry two flags. There's a blue one and a white one. But the only difference in the flags was you used to use them for your background. If you were in a dark background, you used to use a white flag, see? If you were like on a, say, a heavy dark background, you used to use a white flag, see? If you're on a skyline, something like, you use a blue flag. That's the only difference, what I'm saying. But there was just the one flag. It wasn't a semaphore. It was the dots and dashes in there, you see.
Are there any other stories you can remember of the retreat?
I can't remember much more about the retreat. The gun pulled up, like, and
did you get enough rest during? Would you get an overnight stop and a decent rest, or were you getting more and more exhausted?
Well, I did, and then after they got pulled up, we finished up and we went to Bethune. We got drifted around to Bethune, a place called Bethune, and he'd getting pulled up, the attack had stopped, you know, and Johnny had stopped. I went to Bethune, and we were living in houses. The civilians had just gone, because about a day or two after, OSHA getting so, I don't know, there's a woman come up, and she said, there's a madam coming, we used to call her madam, you know, there's a madam, and she came exactly come to us where we were. We were in the front room, what would be in the front room, right? And the guns was in the hedge at the bottom of the garden, and the guns were in the back room, and the officers was next door, in the next house next door. And this madam, and she kept saying, bone, bones, meaning rabbits, see? Why, we'd got the rabbits, we'd kill them. And a fellow called the Battery Clerk, Harry Marshall, he was showing how to kill them now with the back of your hand. And when the madam comes, and he just shook them underneath the sideboard and dressed us out the road. Poor soul, she went down, and she wondered about why the bones are part aid, like as we said. Why, we were blaming the gunners, and the gunners were blaming us. It was pitiful, and yet it was laughable, like, but still. But anyway, I tell you what we did. We got two or three tins of bully beef, and we'll give it a tap on your back, but she didn't get her bones. We had the bones, like, say. But at the time, the line, the canal separating us from the Germans. They were at one side and we were at the other, this side, say. And we were up with Mr. Grange, and I says, I'll have a bit look round, sir. I was always that way, I was just be scouting about. And him and I didn't know who the signal was, it was up, it was Peter Ward. But I had a bit look round, and there was a chateau, a big house farther back. And I went nose and nose. And there must have been somebody, Army Service Corps, somebody in the fort. But downstairs in the cellar, there's a stove, and boxes of firewood, like dry wood, and everything. They've been living in comfort, see? And I went upstairs, and there was a slate being knocked off, and I could see all over the German line. And I went back and told Grange, and he said, well, he says, it's one of the race. I said, I know it is, sir. I says, they might have a champion all pip. So we went there to look, and we decided to go in there, see. And we used that. Why, it was the vegetables in the garden, and there was hens on the boat. We killed those hens and took them back to the body. And in fact, there was a pig there. And when I got back at me to tell the major, I says, about this pig, I says, we'll bet the animal, I says, and knock it down, sir, I says, and oh no, he said, why, I says, if we don't do it, somebody else will, say. But we never got to it, like, say. But what I was going to say there, the infantry, they got the spot of the German machine gun on the opposite side, it was crossing them a bother. And anyway, we laid a line out, temporary line out to them, and to fire it, and we got the guns onto it, see. And I never knew then how wicked our shells was, you know. And we were at one side of the canal, and just so far beyond the other side was where the Germans was, and they even got on, and it started fighting. Our guns hit it, and it smashed it up. But the shells, the fire, they were just over our head, you know. And I never realised what a wicked sound the shelling are. I didn't, they might have been 10 or 12 foot above our heads when they were going to say. But it was... You can't describe the wicked sound, because I was saying, a man never heard a shell that hit him, say, you know, or a gore, say. And,
you thought the shells sounded worse than the German shells you'd heard?
Well, the point is, when you see German shells, like a distance off, because the shell was near to you, or you never heard it, like... The shell was going to bust. It was busted before you were hearing it, I say. Because the spade on the top of it. And there was a Bethune. There was something Bethune there.
Was there much looting going on? I mean, you've talked about taking the rabbits and the couple of chickens, and you were going to take the pig. Was there more serious looting going on than that of people's possessions?
The one really to put it mildly, there was nothing to loot. You know what I mean? There's people for, but we were in one at Bethune when we were in them houses. The people had left the furniture and everything was there. We went scouting around in those, you know, like say, well, that's it was a crime loot, see. But we used to go scouting about. But the only thing we got was clothes you could there. Wearing the part, they took the valuables away like that. Say.
What sort of clothes would you take?
Why, there was one down in front of the lap and one fellow sleeping in at the name going. And what was your going now? And that same house at Bethune, when there was some of these hands that Pete and me, I killed two of the hands to tack them back. And when I'm talking, well, like Dick Whitten, and Mr. Grange, he was a proper tough for you, sir. He was a rank officer, say. And anyway, we'll tap on his back with these hands, and this, that, other. And he says, hey, he says, you'll get away on your own. He says, I'm not with you. He says, you're probably if you get caught, he says, you get shot. But anyway, we took these hands back to battery. And I went and knocked at the door, the next door, like, and I got one for the officers. So I knocked at the door, and come in, I says, hey, I pressed some port, you sir. I says, there might be a change for you. And he laughed at you, Mr. Grange, you're telling me no. But anyway, that was a job, the coke cleaned out, because he had to clean it, the coke goods.
You said Granger was a ranker officer. What did you mean by that?
He come from the ranks. So he worked his way up from the ranks.
But you say he was a proper tough as well.
Well, he's a proper commissioned officer, see. But he worked his way up we used to call them rankers.
Did you have what did you think of ranker officers? Were they as good or as bad as the other officers?
As a rule, generally a rank officer is more because he knew all the tricks of the trade, see. But this one, Mr. Grange, also loved the bottom, see, and he was a ranker, but it somehow never went to his head, like, see. He was still one of us, see. Of course, when you were there, you had Mr. Grange, you had to salute this type of other, see. He was the only man among them. If we were going forward or coming back, he was to get on and then we were carrying rations up and a tin of water and this stuff. Mr. Grange would say, let's say that phone call. He'd get on the telephone and carry the telephone. No, none of the others would ever do that, like. Then when you're coming back, you've said, I better take that sort of phone, get back to the body, see. He wasn't be seen. But he was the only one, he was a rank officer. I believe he was the only one ever we had that was come from a ranch. But we're not famous for him, see.
Was he as... was he officer-like in the way he spoke, you know, his accent and other things like that? Did he mix in with the other officers?
Oh, yes, right. He was a bit more... and his guards, he was an officer, same as them, in all respects. Though others had, like, at that time, they could buy the commissions, you know, see. But he'd gradually worked his way up. There was a man along the same career, Wilson. He got the same way. Tommy Wilson, he got a commission, see. And, but I found out the ranker, he was a better soldier. He was a better real soldier than what the others were, see. But Mr. Grange was the only one that we had. He was a proper tough, we couldn't see any other. Either. And that was at Bethune.
How long did you stay at Bethune?
We stopped at Bethune, or went to Bethune, and then I'm nearly certain that we went away from Bethune down to the what we call the French front between Chemin down the Chemin Downs.
What date would that be? You went down there.
We went down there. It'd be April, say, after the March Retreat, and the March Retreat started the 21st of March, 1918. And after that, we went to Bethune, and then after that, we went the way down. What was the parlor? Fames. FISMES. Fames. And we stayed there.
Before we go on to that, what was your morale like after the retreat and during the retreat of the battery, yourself and the battery? Because it was a long retreat.
I don't think it made very much difference to me.
Did people think the war was lost? Or?
Well, it's funny that this is so perfectly true. The last leave, I don't know what I had for I don't know what I had for it. But the last leave, when I was leaving Barnsley Station to go back, it was generally the talk of whatever, hope the war soon be over, see. I see, as I didn't worry, I see the war be over by Christmas, see. Now, I don't know what made us say, it was just coming to me, see. This old man, this gentleman, he's going to Sheffield. He says, do you think the war be over by Christmas? Well, I says, somehow or another, I have a feeling, I says, the way things are going, I says, I think the war will be over with Christmas, and it was. But I couldn't, it just come to me yet to say it, like, I think it was just to say something, but it exactly panned out that way, see.
So you didn't feel during the retreat that the British were going to lose?
No, someone who never thought about being beaten, you know, see. And
was there any evidence of panic in any of the units you passed?
I can't say there was any panic among them, right? See, it was at first it was disorganised, but they weren't long before they got. Oh, they went back. In fact, they took someone used to take a joke, say, about Why, if we get back on Upper Land, we'll get back to Boulogne and we'll be back home. And one time we were on a retreat, we went past what had been a Yankee camp. And the Yankees had fligged, they'd gone. And we were jumping off the wagons and we were going into the billets, what had been the Yankee billets, and we were fetching kit bags. And then we're looking at sorting them out, what was going on, and well, there's a chunk of the roads where they've been all that. No, it's funny that in our part, I say, they never, it didn't enter your mind about losing the war, see. It was only another stage, like, see. The only thing about it was that, we passed him off. All the land that we took in the Battle of the Somme 1916, he took it back in a couple of days.
Now, was that not depressing?
No, I kind of say, no, I kind of say that they were depressed about it, like, see.
So you then went in April. You went to the Shemanda Dam.
We went down to the Shemanda Dam.
So what were you doing there?
And, well, we were supposed to go down for a rest, see, because we'd been knocked about. Our division had been been Harris, so been all of them.
Had you lost many men in the battery?
We lost a good few different men, gunners and signalmen. Signalmen most of all, see. And,
was this from shell fire?
And then we got down. Oh, we enjoyed the dugouts here, the massive dugouts for the French. We relieved the French battery. And it had been a howitzer, French howitzer battery. And it looked as if we were just going to be there for the rest of the war, see, which we were. And, we were enjoying life. There was a beck, a stream running across day. We used to go in there and get washed in the beck. And
was this position at Femes?
That's
later, is it?
That was Femes was farther back, see? And this was in front of Crianale or something, Crane. That was a very hill. And apparently the French had lost a lot of men capturing that, see? Now, the time over there at on the Shemden Dam, see, the time over there, there was talk that there was an offensive brewing, a German offensive, which it did go off, see, and we had reserve gun pits made on the other side of the river, beyond Femes, see, towards Femes, and we had reserve gun pits and we had ammunition in there, but apparently the French wouldn't give way. They were us retreating back to there, see? And we left there. Why, we come over